It's not every day you get a Super Bowl champion on the show. Today we welcome in former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman and current CBS Sports college football analyst Aaron Taylor for an interview. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about later the NFL Rookie Symposium recently completed just this weekend. Packers rookies getting a orientation to the NFL, but that's coming up later. To start off the show today, we going to feature an interview with former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman Aaron Taylor, a first-round draft pick of the team back in 1994. He was a Super Bowl 31 champion with the Green Bay Packers, and I think that's so cool. Like I said earlier, it's not every day you get a Super Bowl champion on the show. Really enjoyed the chance to talk to Aaron Taylor. This will be a pre-recorded interview, but I think that hardly matters. Had the chance to talk to Aaron Taylor last week. We didn't have any show on Friday, so airing it today for the first time. And I thought it's really interesting to get his thoughts on both the team he played with, which was very good. I mean, he played with several years with the Packers from 1994 to 1997. And now, currently, talking about the current Packers team, his thoughts on the 2015 edition of the Green Bay Packers, and also what he's doing in his post-playing days, working as a analyst for CBS Sports. So let's get to it. Here we go. Our
expert interview.
Right now, we're pleased to be joined by former Green Bay Packers offensive lineman and Super Bowl champion, I might add, and current CBS college football analyst, Aaron Taylor. Mr. Taylor, how are you today?
I'm doing good, my man. How are you doing? Always happy to be talking some Packer football.
Good. Well, we're glad to have you on the show. I kind of wanted to kick things off here with a former teammate of yours. Brett Favre is being inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame this summer. Can you share your favorite memory of playing with Favre with us?
How long of a show do we have here today, bud? Because I could go on for hours.
You have many of them.
It was incredible. I was on the field blocking for him for two of his MVP seasons, so I got to see some incredible moments, very up close and personal. And one of the moments I think that sticks out the most, obviously, is the Super Bowl we won in 96. And after that first touchdown, just how excited he was when he pulled his helmet off and was running to the sideline. Now, we all know that that would be a penalty nowadays, and we don't want to condone showboating. But I think it showed his passion and his enthusiasm for the game. Brett Favre was most comfortable being out on the football field playing football in big moments, and he had tremendous poise. And that's the thing I remember about him the most, is that he was at his best when his best was needed, and he elevated the level of play of everybody around him, including myself. He wasn't a guy that would point fingers and yell. I mean, he was intense, but it was, come on, guys, give me a little bit more time. We got these guys on the post route at the digger, whatever. And it was always encouraging. He was the consummate team player, and it was an honor to play with him. So knowing all the backstory and everything that's gone on, I'm really happy to see that people once again realize and get the chance to see that blood is thicker than water and family's coming home.
I'm putting you on the spot here. Do you have a favorite off-field memory, or are those the type of things that we can't say on air?
If your show ran at 1 a.m., maybe we could talk about some of those things, but those are probably better left staying in the locker room.
Sounds good. Speaking of the Super Bowl team from 96, I was wondering, what similarities do you see between that team and the current Packers team that, of course, was very close to winning a Super Bowl last year and would presumably be a candidate to do so again this year?
Yeah, that meltdown down the stretch in that final game, I think, is still baffling everybody, and we're trying to figure out how that all happened. But the reality is, they're an extremely talented team, and there's a ton of parallels when you look at it, and you don't need to go any further than the offensive side of the ball and look at the production that is there on that side to kind of highlight that. Defensively, I think, is where the differences occur, and we had such a formidable front seven, and we're so solid across from top to bottom. When you look at the Packers team from last year, they were good defensively, but they struggled against the run, were, you know, below the middle of the pack, if you will. I think they finished 15th overall, so dead center almost in the middle of the pack defensively in total defense. So those are some of the issues, being able to stop the run, generate some more turnovers. And I think they addressed that a little bit in this last draft. I really like the young kid Randall out of Arizona State. He's going to provide them some versatility. He's a ball hawk. I think that back end is going to be tremendous in the 2015 season. But stopping the run and being a little stouter up front, I think, is going to be the next step necessary for this Packer team to once again raise the Lombardi Trophy.
Yourself being an offensive lineman, how do you think this current Packers offensive line stacks up to others in the NFL? Because I think they're really, really good. I don't know if they're the best, but I'd say they're up there.
They're one of, I won't say that they're the significant reason that the Packers did as well as they did last year, but the success that we're watching with Aaron Rodgers is directly relatable to what that offensive line is doing. And when you look at what Coach James Campen has done with that unit, that's a bunch of fourth rounders, say Brian, you know, say Brian. So it's an amazing feat what those guys have done, and been particularly impressed with the job that Josh Sitton, the left tackle's done. Bakhtiari, the way he came in and filled in maybe and in a position and earlier than he was expected to, filling in there. It's just been amazing what they've done. And the element of the run game with Eddie Lacy certainly helps the offense do well across the board. But those guys are the unsung heroes. And I think they have gotten, at least in football circles, the praise that they deserve. There may be some better individual players and arguably a unit or two, but there would be a lot of teams, and I'm saying 25-plus in the NFL, that would like to trade their offensive line for what the Packers have.
If we talk about one of these guys in particular, the NFL Network is currently in the midst of releasing their top 100 players in the NFL list. They do this every year, and it doesn't appear as if Josh Sitton is going to make the list, but again, yourself being a former guard, do you think his value is being overlooked? Because again, I think he might be deserving of being on a top 100 players list.
I would agree with you there, and it just depends how much credence you want to put in the NFL Network and how they vote and what their vested interests are or not. So, I mean, take all that with a grain of salt, right? Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You flip the tape on, you watch Josh Sitton play, and you see somebody who's kicking tail both in the pass protection and in the run game. And it's rare to find big guards that can kind of do both. But I remember watching this kid back at UCF, his offensive line coach, Brent Key, and we called a bunch of those games very early on. I was like, keep your eye on this kid. He's going to be a player for us, and that's certainly been able to manifest. I think being a Pro Bowler in 2012, along with Jeff Saturday, which was a big feat, and again, that's something I think that alludes to the coaching they're getting with camp. That line across the front is outstanding. I think that Josh is one of the premier players there, and they're a tight group. They're a tight unit. They play together. There's chemistry there, and you can tell that just by being around the guys, but also, you know, when you flip on the film, you can tell that there's something there. And you have to wonder if him being able to play through the pain and being banged up all through the 2014 season, maybe that's why he didn't make that list. But the guy's a durable, tough football player that the Packers are lucky to have, and fans should appreciate what they have in Josh Sitton.
We're talking to Green Bay Packers Super Bowl champion Aaron Taylor here at Railbird Central on 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. Mr. Taylor, you were a first-round draft pick in the NFL. To help us understand the pressure and the expectations on a first-round draft choice that they face, what can this year's Packers first-rounder Demaryius Randle expect, especially from the fans and the media? Can that be overwhelming?
It can be overwhelming, but I think the Ted Thompson and his crew and all general managers across the NFL do an outstanding job, not just evaluating tape and seeing what guys are physically able to do or not, but also evaluating personality traits and styles. And it's an inexact science. We all know that. But Darius Randle was somebody that really showed up on tape with me. I called one of their games early on against New Mexico at Arizona State last year. And number three was all over the joint. I mean, he was somebody that no question has the ability to play, and he's got some versatility. I think he's athletic enough to play corner. He's certainly physical enough to come up and stuff the run and throw some things around inside as a box player on occasion as well. But the expectations, particularly with the money, and I think the salary cap and the slotting's probably helped that, mm-hmm. kind of get that under control. But the game moves so much quicker. It's such a longer season. And with the lack of contact that goes on with OTAs now in the off season, it can be a burden not only emotionally but physically on your body. So taking and elevating your game from being a good, solid collegiate player to being a professional, and everything you do, everything you put into your body, the way you sleep, the way you eat, your patterns, your behaviors, taking care of yourself in the weight room and in the training room, that takes a tremendous amount of focus and dedication that I think a lot of 21-year-old men across the country would struggle doing, let alone ones that have the distractions that they have. So it's a lot on these guys' plates, but there's a reason that they're even on that level, and that's because they've outperformed their peers. So you just hope the guy can keep everything in perspective. There's a ton of veterans on that team, particularly on that side of the football, that I think will be able to help him do that. And the good thing about Green Bay is it's a town of 100,000. He's going from a school that had 50,000 students to an entire town that's only got 100,000. So I think relatively you can only get in so much trouble in Green Bay, and I think that's part of the allure and part of the benefits of playing for the Packers.
That's a good point. I think Arizona State's the biggest university in the nation, student population, so that'll definitely be a little different. You talked about games you worked last year with Demaryius Randle. We're fast approaching the season this year. As a college football analyst at CBS Sports, have you already received your early season assignments about games you'll be announcing?
I have. November is going to be a good month for me. I typically call the best game in the Mountain West Conference each week, and we've got some good ones coming up. We're going to open with Colorado at Hawaii and then UCLA in week two, so that'll be fun to be able to have an opportunity to be able to call some of those games and teams that we don't normally see at that part of the year. But I also call the B games for the SEC conference, including Missouri, Arkansas on the Friday after Thanksgiving. So there's going to be some fun opportunities for me personally, but I love college football in general. It's so exciting. People don't do what they're supposed to do. These coaches are full-time coaches, but they've got part-time players. They're not professionals. They're students, and they're distracted, and there's girls running around, and there's all sorts of stuff that these kids have to manage. So every single Saturday, we see something that should not happen, and it happens with regularity. So I'm really enjoying this season that's going to be coming up. I think the main storyline is going to be Urban Meyer and how he manages that three-headed monster at the quarterback position. Last year, it was getting guys that hadn't played and tasted success getting ready to play. This year, all three are going to be healthy. All three have been proven playmakers. So how do you manage those egos when each one of those guys feels like and has demonstrated and proved that they deserve to be on the field? That's something to watch. The SEC West, you could put any one of those seven teams in any other conference and they would compete and be one of the top two best teams in that conference. But I also think the Pac-12 South is going to be the second best conference in college football this year. And keep your eye on that Arizona State team. That's my dark horse to win the Pac-12 South this year.
All right. To kind of bridge the gap between the college and the pro game here, you're a Notre Dame grad. I've always felt that there was kind of a connection between Green Bay and Notre Dame. It's the small town atmosphere. It's the stadium bleachers. It's the prevalence of the Catholic religion in the area. Do you get that feeling as well? Is there kind of a connection there between the two?
No question. That's a great observation. It felt like coming home. I felt like I stepped out of a different colored jersey but walked into the same locker room when I left Notre Dame in 1994, because it was about the team. And I mean, we joke about it now. My goodness, had I gotten drafted to San Diego or New York City, I don't know how these kids do it in these big markets with all the extra distractions. I was serious when I said there's only so much trouble you can get in. You got to get in the car to drive to Milwaukee or drive to Chicago to get a taste of what these guys get on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. We would all hang out together across the street at Stadium View or doing different things where you could only get so far before there would be somebody that says, "Hey, man, you know, time to jump in the cab or time to do this," or probably not a good idea. So there was accountability and support there. But the element of the history and the tradition, being part of something bigger than yourself, being part of a family, being part of unconditional support and love, family is the best way that I can describe that. And it's still that way. I mean, I played there for 4 years, was hurt for 1.5 of them. We won a Super Bowl, and I still walk in that building and I get hugs and high fives. It's unbelievable, the community that the Packers are and the people there and the people that I've hunted with and fished with over the years that I still stay in contact with. Bill Kresge out in Wausau, he owns Wausau Tile. He's a very good buddy of mine, and I see him from time to time still. It's just an amazing community to be a part of, and very, very similar because of that with what I experienced at Notre Dame.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your experiences here on the show this morning. Have fun this year. Sounds like you're going to be announcing some games in some, compared to Green Bay, going out to Hawaii, Los Angeles sounds really good. So have fun doing that. But we appreciate you joining us on the show and loved hearing your stories.
Thank you, partner. Looking forward to doing it again.
Sounds good. Thank you. There you go, an interview with former Green Bay Packers Super Bowl champion Aaron Taylor. Just loved hearing his stories, getting his viewpoint on several different issues, from Brett Favre to the current Packers offensive line, which he thinks is fantastic, and I don't know how you can't agree with him. The line the Packers are building right now is so good. And we, you know, spoke in depth about Josh Sitton, who I think now is a three-time Pro Bowler after the 2014 season. Was that the third time he was voted to the Pro Bowl? So, I mean, he kind of leads the list, but I mean, it doesn't stop there. You've got a kid who I think is absolutely up and coming here, Corey Linsley. For the situation he stepped into his rookie season, the way he performed is absolutely remarkable. And you wonder, like, how much better could he have been had he, you know, maybe been the starter from day one? I mean, you kind of come into the situation as a fifth round draft choice, and he's sitting there competing with JC Tretter, and who knows if JC Tretter never gets injured that third preseason game, I don't know if Corey Linsley cracks the lineup. I mean, because JC Tretter was playing well. He was playing well during training camp last season, from the preseason action that I saw, from practices I attended to the family night. JC Tretter wasn't giving the job away or anything like that. And that's not to say Corey Linsley was playing poorly at the time. He's thrust into the role, and what he did was remarkable. I mean, voted to the all rookie team by the Pro Football Writers of America. And you could certainly make the argument that he deserved maybe to be at least in the running for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. Now, they rarely give those to offensive linemen. Maybe that's a discussion for another day, whether they should be, you know, voted for those types of awards. But regardless, Corey Linsley, amazing rookie season. Then you got the tackles, David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga on the bookends, and the Packers, you know, made sure this offseason that they maintain that continuity with Brian Bulaga, re-signing him in free agency, bringing a steadying influence to the line. There's no turnover there. You've got, you know, TJ Lang, the right guard, a guy who's played every position on the offensive line, all five, at some point over the course of his career. TJ Lang has played left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. He's versatile. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's experienced. This is an amazing, amazing unit. I think sometimes the backup situation is maybe a little bit tenuous. Like if the Packers were to suffer a season-ending injury there, I might be a little bit worried. Don Barclay has been really good, except that he's coming off an ACL injury last year. I worry that he's not going to be 100% in time for at least the start of the 2015 season. Like we've talked about this before. I mean, guys come back from that ACL injury in year one, and if you're playing at 98%, 99%, that doesn't cut it in the NFL. You know, you got to be at 100% if you want to stand a chance. So that worries me a little bit. Not that I'm throwing in the towel on Don Barclay. I'm certainly willing to watch and you know, see if he is getting back into shape. And it was certainly a step in the right direction that he, you know, participated in, you know, OTAs and mini camp and things like that. And that bodes well for the training camp to come. And now you've got J.C. Treader, who's, you know, kind of he kind of looks like a jack of all trades, where he was backing up many positions last year, including, you know, what looks to be his best position at center, but kind of blocked by five really good guys there. You know, who knows who else the Packers will develop this year. They could use a true offensive tackle, and I don't know, maybe they got some rookies who can do that. The kid out of Arizona, Fabians Ebele. Maybe the kid out of Pittsburgh, he's more of a guard, Matt Rotheram. We'll see how those guys come along. Never know. Maybe find a diamond in the rough with those. The point being, the Packers have a really good offensive line. Aaron Taylor thought so. I think so. I don't think there's many, you know, football people out there that don't think so. Whether or not the number one line in the NFL, that's a point of debate. But they're up there near the top. But anyway, thanks to Aaron Taylor for joining us on the show today, and thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we kind of continue with the show here in our next segment.
Packers news of the day.
The news over the weekend, of course, you know, we're getting near the holidays here, and news is kind of coming to a crawl. I think the biggest Packers-related story, at least over the past 24 hours, was Eddie Lacy's appearance on Celebrity Family Feud on Sunday. Was entertaining to watch. I actually had the opportunity to sit down and watch a little bit of it. I think I missed the very beginning of the show yesterday. But, you know, hosted by Steve Harvey, it was fun to see him out there, and they're doing it for charity. Lacy was part of a group of the NFC players that took on the AFC. And unfortunately for Eddie's sake, the NFC lost. It was the AFC group that won. I know who else was out there, you know, playing for the AFC. Nick Mangold of the New York Jets, Terrell Suggs of the Baltimore Ravens, just off the top of my head. They had ended up winning $25,000 going to charity. I know Eddie Lacy was representing the St. Jude's Children's Hospital. So because they lost the game, the charitable money didn't go there. But hopefully they got a little bit of attention, at least from being on national television, televised on ABC. So it was a fun thing that took place over the weekend. But in terms of like actual NFL noteworthy news, the NFL Rookie Symposium wrapped up on Saturday, at least the NFC portion of it, in which Green Bay Packers draft choices were in attendance. It lasted 4 days long, from Wednesday through Saturday, kind of their orientation to the NFL in which they hold, you know, they see speakers speak, they hold workshops, they debate, you know, a lot of different things that, you know, not X's and O's stuff, more like how to handle yourself on and off the field from a professional standpoint, and giving them resources and talking about topics from, you know, their own health and well-being and financial management. And I'm sure they very much touched on domestic abuse, which is becoming such an issue in the NFL. But anyway, it all wrapped up on Saturday, and the event kind of concludes with a trip to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. And that's where the Green Bay Packers rookies received a, according to the press release from the NFL, a lesson from Pro Football Hall of Famers Curtis Martin and Anthony Munoz, which is really cool, while they were there. So they got to tour the facility and see the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I just think that that is a really cool way for them to end, you know, an event like that. The orientation where you're kind of talking so much about off the field issues, and but then you can kind of conclude with a part that, you know, talks about the history and the tradition and the legacy of the game. And these guys got to see, you know, there's as many Green Bay Packers in the Hall of Fame as maybe any other team in the NFL. I'd be interested in knowing that. What team is the most heavily represented in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Maybe that's a hard thing that's hard to quantify, because, you know, when you got players who played for multiple teams, are you counting every team they played for or whatever? But anyway, they got to see, you know, several, I'm sure, the busts of several former Packers, and hopefully inspired by that occasion. So that was the NFL's Rookie Symposium. But for the next segment of the show,
the day ahead.
Here we go. On Monday, current Green Bay Packers Corey Linsley and Jared Aberderis are making an appearance at the Swings Against Cancer golf outing at the Ridges Golf Course in Wisconsin Rapids. So, like I said here, it's the week of the 4th of July this week. So here we are in a time period where mini camp is over and training camp is yet to begin. Not a whole lot of football, on-field football news to talk about. So the players with little to do for the time being during their, you know, short vacation time before the start of training camp, going out and hitting the links and doing it for a good cause at that. So there's, I know, some more information at the official website of the Green Bay Packers. They got a little, you can see it there right on their homepage, little alert that shows you what Corey Linsley and Jared Aberderis are doing today. And so like I said, little else to tell you on field football news. I guess the one thing I could mention here that I think is really cool is what we're doing right here at 24/7 Sports. I am kind of in the midst of authoring. If you haven't seen it, all you got to do is go to the Packers page at 24/7 Sports and check it out. The top 10 Packers trait countdown. And what I mean by trait is I write this in the introduction to every player. You know, call them traits, characteristics, however you want to define that. But the unique things that each player brings to the field, and I've had a real fun time creating it so far. We're only through number 7 here, as I'm kind of doing about one a day during the weekdays here, taking off the weekends, of course. But what I've done so far is tried to identify the best traits on the team. And we started with number 10, Sam Shields, and his undercut ability. I think when you think of some of Sam Shields' most memorable moments in a Packers uniform, they've come where he's kind of breaking on the football, and not just doing that, but undercutting the intended receiver to make several notable interceptions. He did it in the NFC Championship game his rookie year that helped the Packers qualify for the Super Bowl, clinch that Super Bowl berth. He did it in the 2012 playoffs against Colin Kaepernick, where Sam Shields broke on a ball and got a pick six. He did it in the 2013 season when the Packers had a come-from-behind victory on the road against Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys. These are things that stick out in my mind and the things that Sam Shields does really, really well. Certainly, I understand his 2014 season was not exactly superb, but Sam Shields is still supremely talented, and this is just about the things they do well, not the things they do poorly. Number 10, Clint Dix, last year's first-round draft choice. His range, the amount of ground he can cover, I think is really remarkable. He came in at number 9 overall, and it's both against the run and the pass. I love seeing him when he's deep on the field. He's kind of, you know, lined up as the free safety, the furthest guy back on the field, but he'll still come up and fill holes and meet a running back in an open area and be able to take him down, as well as covering a large amount of ground against the pass. You worry so often that, you know, especially rookies in the NFL, that they're going to make a lot of mistakes. They're going to let people, receivers, get behind them. You didn't see that from Clint Dix very much last year. I think for a large majority of the season, you didn't see a whole lot of playmaking ability out of Clint Dix, but you also saw him not getting beat, which I thought was, you know, for that's what you want as a rookie. If you're not going to make plays, at least don't make mistakes. And he made very few. He missed some tackles, no doubt, but he also rarely allowed receivers to get behind him. And I think that, you know, really bodes well for his future and you know, the playmaking that is yet to come from him. Number 8 on the list, Mike Daniels and his leverage. You know, obviously, this has been a storyline since he entered the NFL. Mike Daniels is only about 6 feet tall, which is, you know, pretty short for defensive linemen in the NFL. But he uses that to his advantage by getting underneath players, knocking them off balance, and that's part of what makes him really, really good. I mean, Mike Daniels has a quick first step, and he gets a lot of sacks from the interior of the defensive line, which is remarkable. That's hard to do when you're not, you know, sacks are much easier to come by when rushing off the edge instead of rushing up the middle, where you're going to find more traffic, more blockers, and Mike Daniels does about as good as anybody in the NFL. But the leverage he uses, he was a former wrestler in high school, and you can tell that he kind of uses that ability, that background, to his advantage and really gets underneath guys, like I said, knocks them off balance and gets by them, whether it's battling with his hands or, you know, using some sort of move, a rip move, a swim move, whatever. Mike Daniels does it pretty well. Number 7, and this was the last entry in the list thus far, Corey Linsley and his upper body strength. We talked about the Packers offensive line earlier in the show, but I think the thing that stood out to me with Corey Linsley more than anything, just how massive his arms are. I remember the first time I saw him in person, I'm like, wow, these are the biggest arms I've ever seen on a Packers center ever, probably. But he just the strength he displays out there. If he is able to latch on to someone, they're not getting out of it. And I know, as I kind of wrote the post, kind of did a little bit of breakdown, and you know, did a little bit of film work, and you could see him actually pancaking Ndamukong Suh, of all people, right to the ground, took him down, flattened him. And if you're able to do that to, you know, arguably the best defensive player in the entire NFL, or, you know, I know he became the highest paid defensive player in the NFL during the offseason. That's pretty good, and that there's nothing but good to come here from Corey Linsley in the future. So we've done the countdown 10 through 7. We've got 6 through 1 coming up, and that'll be continuing today. So you can look forward to the next entry in the Packers Top 10 Trait Countdown series here at 24/7 Sports. I'm looking forward to writing it, and I hope you're looking forward to reading it. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Monday morning. Glad to have Aaron Taylor on the show joining us of CBS College Sports. And we'll see you later. Like I said, like I usually say, our live show airs every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, typically. Because of the holidays, we might take a little bit time off here. I know we didn't have a show this past Friday, but typically every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, live edition, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, viewable, listenable, on demand at any time after that. You know, just subscribe to us on iTunes or however, whatever app you use to do your podcast listening. And please give us a rating on iTunes. My call to action, this podcast is free, no subscription, no paywall. The one small thing we ask, give us a rating on iTunes, helps get the word out about the show, and we really, really appreciate it. But we'll see you later, folks. Have a good Monday. We'll see you again on Wednesday. I leave you today with a song called Valley of the Jig by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go.